Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting across from James O'Loughlin. And we are here to talk about The New Kid, which Unpopular Me, which is James's new book for what age group are we going for?
Primary.
Primary. As a kid, I didn't read very, very good when I was a kid.
Neither did I.
I didn't like the age ranges on books.
Yeah.
Because I read what I could read at that particular time.
Yeah, I went to something that was called, it wouldn't be called that today, remedial reading.
Right.
The story's about Sam who moves from Adelaide where he's happy, he's an only child, to Canberra when he's 11. He's suddenly the new kid and everything's new and he has to try and find friends. But that happened to me when I was 8. And because my school in Adelaide, they had this kind of open plan thing where you could kind of learn when you want to learn. I spent a lot more time playing than I did reading. So I was the only kid in my class who couldn't read.
Yeah.
So I remember going to those, they were called remedial reading classes. Yeah.
That was terrible, absolutely terrible. Yeah. And, for most of my schooling, if there was something to read, I avoided it. Everything I could to get around doing the actual reading.
So when did that change? Because you're obviously right into it now.
Yeah, it changed right at the last moment. So I was bombing out. I got 0 in the HSC. So I bombed out. And a friend of mine who knew that I liked TV and film and the rest of it, knew I liked MASH, gave me Catch 22. And for the first time, something was interesting enough to put up with the tedium of the actual process.
Wow.
And so I sat there, and it took me ages to read this thing because it's a complicated book.
Yeah.
But it was the interest thing that drove me through.
Mm.
And so from then, it's really been around that. It's been, is it worth the effort?
Yeah, exactly. And I think today, writers more than ever before, adults writers, but probably particularly kids writers, have to be really aware of that. Because when we were growing up, the alternative to reading for me was often staring at the wall. So a book didn't have to be very good to be better than staring at the wall. But kids have so many alternatives now. If you don't give them a really good reason to turn the page, like what's going to happen, or alternatively, I've got a laugh on this page, so there might be another one on the next page, then they won't.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So if you actually, in the writing, because sometimes you just get caught up in the creativity side of things, but are you part of your conscious brain going, I've got to keep this kid's attention?
Ah, yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. And my kids who are 15, 12 and 10, they're my test audience. And the amount of times when I've read them first drafts of books, and particularly my middle daughter Nina goes, yeah, we get it, he's in a forest. You know, I don't care how many trees there are. I don't care what colour the leaves are. He's in a forest. What's going to happen? She always says the same thing. She says, Dad, you're over-explaining. And it's the best advice an author can get. It's someone telling you when you're getting boring, right? Or the other one is when I have jokes and I read them and I kind of wait for their reaction and I go, oh, I thought that was kind of funny. And they go, yeah, it was a smiler. So it wasn't worth, a laugh out loud. But, you know, often I'm, you know, I'm not looking at their faces when I'm reading. They go, yeah, we smiled. You know, what do you want?
I get, he hit the explanation button.
Yeah.
He weren't listening to what John was saying. Because he hit the explanation button.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God. I just know when things are going wrong when that happens.
Yeah, that's right.
So you've given a kind of an autobiographical in for me. Are there bits that you've regurgitated from your own past into this book? If you were dragged from...
Definitely. I basically took everything funny and or embarrassing that I could remember happening to me as a kid and made it funnier and more embarrassing. So, for example, I went to, you know, well, in this book it's called Special Reading Class.
Yeah.
And Sam doesn't understand why it's not called Bad at Reading Class, you know, because that would be more honest. So I went to that class and Sam goes to that class. And I think I remember reading Ant and Bee books. So he reads Ant and Bee books and thinks it's ridiculous that an ant and bee can be friends because the bee would go, okay, let's go to the shops, and he'd go there, then have to wait 3 days for the ant to arrive. So I've taken little starting points. And my mum did take me underpants shopping, and I do remember it as very embarrassing. I'm sure she wasn't as embarrassing as Sam's mum in the book. So I just made it more embarrassing and more funny, basically.
With the reading side of things, what, you know, you've got three kids, you've got your testers at home. How difficult is it for parents to actually, because it's all great in the brain. You're creating writing to convince kids to give, you know, this whole book thing a go. But you've actually experienced it. What success rate have you had? That's what I'm trying to get to.
Do you mean when I'm reading?
Well, no, when like your kids, are they readers?
I see what you mean. Yes, the oldest one is definitely avid reader. The middle two, they are great. They've been through phases when they've been right into it. But I think they're great examples of the fact that they have more alternatives now. Like, I was an only child. So the younger two of my kids, the 12 and 10-year-old, they're great mates. So it's kind of more exciting for them to play with each other than it is. There is literally every single TV show ever made in a little box on our television. Mm. And whilst we limit that, they all are, but they all have more alternatives and more choice, and they sort of go through phases. Mm. So,
do you have any tips for parents?
Yeah. Follow if you can. So I bribed.
Bribery and corruption.
I said to my daughter the other day, this might be bad parenting. She said, can I have a squishy? I said, only if you buy a book. So, you know those little squishies, you squish them, they're like stress balls. She wanted to order one online. I said, only if you order it from Booktopia. She said, they don't have it. She said, maybe you should diversify. But I said, we're going to the shopping centre. If you go to a bookshop and buy a book, you can have a squishy. So I try lots of things, and I kind of think it's kind of the opposite. Like when kids ask for a present, you know, you always think no money. You've got to teach them, well, yes, or but yes, but it's expensive or a treat. With books, I'm kind of the opposite. I almost try and pretend that money doesn't exist and there's a bottomless pit of it for books.
Yeah.
So I guess just to make it clear it's a good, worthwhile thing, find the fun book, you know. It doesn't have to be worthy. Just find something they can get lost in, whatever their interests are. Funny is good. Mm. My publisher tells me all the time, funny, funny, funny. The first three books I wrote were kind of, they had jokes in them, but they were more serious, complex novels. And she was going, come on, you're a comedian. Write something funny, funny, funny. And funny's great. It's hard not to enjoy funny, right? So if you can find a good funny book for your kid, they're, you know, if you laugh, you're going to turn the page.
Well, we've seen some of the biggest selling kids' books on the planet have the funny bone in them.
Yeah.
And the Winky Kids and the Story Treehouse series.
Exactly.
You know, these are books that – and these have been great. Gateway drugs to reading for lots of kids. I mean, they just, as you said, there's so much competition, and you throw them a funny book, and have you seen the book The Funny Kid? It was come out the other day last year, and my nephew just wouldn't. Like, his sister reads it like crazy. One funny book, boom, and my mother, his grandmother, got a snap of him reading a book for, so it's on the record.
Yeah.
But that was it. That was his in. I mean, this is a great, probably the smartest way to go. My kids got into the horror thing for.
Yeah. One of mine did too.
It was funny as parents, we were kind of resistant to it. And then we sort of slapped ourselves around and said, they're sitting still and they're not looking at a screen, and it's been going on for weeks now because they're going through a whole series of things.
I've had a couple of interesting discussions about, particularly, you know, when you go into YA books, you know, is this book appropriate? And I read something, I'd like to claim it as my own thought, but it's not. I can't remember who said it. It said, books are a really safe place for kids to explore tricky issues. Mm. So it's not like a movie where the images are going to stay with you. They can stop. They can go at their own pace. You know, they can go away and think about it for a while and then come back. Mm-hmm. So, I think I probably, when I was growing up, there weren't books about, you know, YA books about the range of subjects that there are today. But I think I found out a lot about tricky subjects, whether it be friendship or violence or whatever, through a safe space like a book, where I would have found a film very disturbing.
Well, you would have had the same thing as me. I don't really recall anything being advertised or pushed towards the teen years when I was growing up. You stopped at a certain point from doing kids' books and went straight to reading your parents' Wilbur Smith.
Yeah.
There was no sort of bridge. Yeah, and most
that's
of
my- so funny. We've had a similar reading history. I remember Catch 22, and I remember there was a shelf of Wilbur Smith, and I went right the way through them.
Yeah. And that's it's one of those things. And you know, my friends, they would have like this weird knowledge. I go, where'd you get that knowledge? Yeah. And they'd go, oh, I borrowed my mum's Jackie Collins. It just seemed to fall open on the page.
Yeah. Harold Robbins.
Yeah, these sort of things. And that was a massive leap from sort of going from your Secret Sevens to...
I kind of regret the fact that there weren't, you know, like books like The Hunger Games, for example. It's a rattling good story and really complex and almost like, you know, the actual... Who's going to survive is almost like an Agatha Christie, what's that? Well, there's 10 on the island and they keep getting murdered and then there were none. But it's also about torture and violence and betrayal and repression and there's also really big societal issues in it. So to find that out while being hurled through a rattling good story, like I probably got that from the Lord of the Rings a bit that I got right into when I was a teenager, but I guess the politics of the Lord of the Rings are kind of a lot more conservative, if you like, than some of the other.
Also, if your kids are reading it, they're going, yeah, you described the trees already, but...
That's right.
Be like, what is it with this mountain?
Yeah.
It's a mountain, all right? Don't describe it. It's got really sharp sides on it, pointy top, maybe a bit of snow. That's it. That's all I need.
Tolkien was one of the few authors that, for me, could get away with that. Like a long description of the forest and I'd still be right into it. But I always say when I try and persuade my kids to read The Lord of the Rings, that sadly none of them have yet, there is a bit that I found hard going in the first book in Tom Bombadil's forest that kind of isn't connected to any of the rest of the book. Once you get through that forest, the rest of it's great. Just get through that forest.
Well, it's interesting because I've been selling books for too long, and one of the mainstays of the book world was the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Since the movies, it isn't the same sale rate. Nowhere near. I mean, it's a pretty chunky book to look at if you're buying the one volume.
Yeah.
And then if you're buying the three, it even looks worse. For people who are going to take the challenge. But when they make an actual successful film of something like that, it takes the wind out of the sails. I always often worry because there's so much pressure these days for authors to get the film deal. But sometimes a film can actually take the whole impetus to read the book. If the film is good.
Yeah.
Like if it's really crap, then the book sort of survives. But if it's really good, it kind of drags
people. Yeah, I mean, I guess The Hunger Games are the same. Those movies, you know, people say were done really well, and I agree. And if you see them first, why would you read?
Yeah, and those sales, they're still going, but they're nowhere near as they were when it was just the only way you could hear the story is to actually read the book.
Bear that in mind. Thanks.
Yeah, when the new kid gets... I'm not going down that path. Thank you. I have heard stories of authors saying no. So, you know, you can hold steady.
Right. I'll bear that in mind.
Yeah, don't go that wimpy kid way or the
Well, they're a good example because the movies, I think, of the wimpy kid weren't, they weren't... seen as being iconic, were they? They weren't seen as that. And there's something that it's probably the combination of his drawings as well.
Yeah.
Something about the books that's very unique and I think will sort of transcend the movies.
I like to, when I get an author sitting across from me, I like to go into a bit of the actual nitty gritty of the whole writing bit. Because
good.
It takes a bit of time to put a book together.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Yeah, yeah.
Phew, I thought that was just me.
Yeah. And you're a busy man. So how do you manage your deadlines, the creative side of your life and the slow creative side of your life, which is this writing?
Yeah. Well, I guess there has to be a commitment to it.
Mm.
And I like it. And if I've got a day where all I have to do is kind of sit in the living room looking out on our little garden and type away, that's a good day for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try and do other things as well as I can, but efficiently, so I've got enough time for that. In a way, it's like, you know, how do busy business people find time to indulge their hobbies of golf or cycling or gardening, if it's important to you, you make time. And it is important to me, and I want to keep doing it. So it's, you know, it's a priority, and I try and make sure that I fit everything together so that there's enough time to write. And it seems, you know, it works pretty well. I mean, I might catch a plane to Melbourne to do a speaking job, and I, you know, do 500 words on the plane. So the good thing about writing, you can do it in the plane, you can do it in the taxi. Some people say, oh, no, they have to be in their special place, but I'm luckily not like that.
That's good, yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things. If you're a busy person, you, as you said, you have to make time. And these days with the phones, and if you get a good idea, you've always got a notepad on you.
Like, yeah.
With the smartphone, you can always jot it down or even just talk it in.
Well, I used to always have good ideas while I was jogging, and I'd just leave myself a voice memo, but the only flaw in that plan was when I got home and played it back, and it'd be like, so I'd usually have them going up this hill. But the first book I wrote, The Adventures of Sir Roderick the Not Very Brave, the first children's book I wrote, because I wasn't used to the discipline of it then, and I knew I'd had attempts before where I'd started and not finished, I just made myself three rules. One is no TV, right? Mm-hmm. And so I thought, when I die, am I really going to regret not watching TV for a year, except for Friday Night Football? I made one exception. No TV, an hour a night after the kids go to bed. And they'd go to bed at, you know, 8 or 9, and then I'd do an hour 9 to 10. That'd be usually time I'd be vegging in front of the telly. And the third rule was don't stop till it's finished. So just keep, it might be crap, it might be terrible, no one might ever publish it, but just I wanted to get to the end.
Yeah.
And if you, I'm a big believer in rules, because if you think, I'm kind of in the habit enough of writing, and it's a bigger part of my life now, to know that I will just do it and find the time. But when you're trying to start a new habit, if you have to negotiate every night, shall I do it tonight? I had a really big day, da da da. You just end up spending most of your time arguing with yourself and then hating yourself. If you just have a rule that you don't let yourself break, an hour a night, no TV, then it's kind of easy. Yeah. You know, you just follow the rule.
Yeah, well, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Patrick Ness sitting in the chair, and he said, authors are those who finish the work. Like, it's pretty much as basic as that. You know, if you finish your manuscript and you get to the end and you're happy with it, oh, exciting an author.
Yeah.
Don't even get close.
Exactly. I say that to kids when I do, when I go to schools. I say the people who finish stories aren't necessarily the best writers. They're not necessarily the most clever or creative kids. They're the people that keep going till they get to the end.
Yeah.
And that's all it is, yeah. And it depends how you define an author, but I'd define an author as anyone who writes and finishes a story, not anyone who writes and finishes a story and gets published. Mm-hmm. Whether you get published or not is sort of outside your control, but if you finish a story, yeah, you're a story writer.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's been good.
We've wandered a lot across a whole lot of subjects. I like this kind of meandering podcast. Podcasts are awesome.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much for coming.
It's a great pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you can get hold of all of Jane's books at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.